A single arrow changes everything. One moment, you're a desperate hunter tracking prey through frozen woods, and the next, you're facing a beast who demands payment for a kill you didn't know was forbidden. This is how Fair Archeron's world shatters, not with fanfare, but with the quiet release of a bowstring and the thud of a body in snow. At 19, Fair carries the weight of her family's survival on calloused hands that once dreamed of holding paintbrushes instead of weapons. Her father, crippled and broken, stares blankly at walls. Her sisters, Nesta and Eloise, refuse to soil their hands with work, clinging to memories of their lost wealth like drowning women clutching driftwood. So Fair hunts. She sets snares. She returns each night, praying her empty game bag won't mean empty stomachs. The girl who once sketched beauty onto any surface she could find now sees the world only in terms of what can be killed and eaten. But that wolf in the winter woods, the one with eyes far too intelligent, far too knowing, wasn't just prey. It was Andres, a fairy warrior from beyond the wall that separates the human realm from the magical land of Prithian. And Fair's perfect shot has violated an ancient treaty written in blood and fear. When Tamlin arrives at her cottage door, massive and terrible in his beast form, she expects death. Instead, he offers a choice that defies every story she's ever heard: die now or live forever as his captive in the fairy realm. With her family cowering behind her and her mother's deathbed promise echoing in her mind, Fair chooses captivity. She chooses life, and she secretly begins planning her escape before she's even crossed the threshold into his world. Tamlin's estate defies expectations. Marble halls bloom with roses, gardens whisper in eternal spring, and Fair's chambers rival those of queens. Her captor, shedding his beast form, appears as a masked fairy lord radiating barely contained power. The golden mask fused to his face curves with intricate rays, beautiful and unsettling in its permanence. Yet beauty carries thorns. The manor echoes with conspicuous absences. Where are the courtiers and servants that should fill a high lord's estate? Tamlin and Lucien wear masks like chains, magical remnants of some blight that struck during a masquerade 49 years ago. Lucien's fox mask, with its mechanical eye, regards Fair with open hostility. She killed their friend. Why shouldn't she pay? Questions multiply. Why would Tamlin send his people to die across the wall? What power holds these immortals in such fear? The Spring Court itself becomes a character. Sentient gardens shifting at twilight, pools reflecting impossible starlight, mysterious creatures prowling darker borders. Fair's artistic soul, buried beneath survival, awakens in this gilded cage. Tamlin provides paints and canvases, watching as she captures his realm in color. His kindnesses complicate her hatred: money for her family, protection from threats, encouragement of her art. Yet these gestures remind her of his power, making gratitude feel like betrayal. Everything Fair knew about fairies crumbles. They can lie. Iron doesn't harm them. These deceptions gave humans false security for generations, revealing her worldview was built on deliberate misinformation. The masks worn throughout the Spring Court operate on multiple levels. Physically, they're permanent fixtures from that mysterious blight: Tamlin's fierce wolf, Lucien's cunning fox. Metaphorically, they represent hidden truths. Tamlin's controlled ferocity conceals gentleness, Lucien's sardonic wit masks deep wounds, and Fair's toughness hides vulnerability carved by poverty. When Fair helps Tamlin tend a dying fairy, something fundamental shifts. "I wouldn't want to die alone," she tells him. "I'd want someone to hold my hand until the end, and a while after that." The fairy's peaceful passing challenges everything she believed about fairy cruelty. Fair's illiteracy becomes a dangerous liability, where knowledge equals power. Her family's fall from nobility left no room for education, only survival. When Tamlin discovers this vulnerability, he offers patient assistance. Their reading lessons become intimate moments where both reveal their true selves, because while masks protect, they also isolate. Kalan Mai, Fire Knight, strips away civilization's veneer to reveal Prithian's raw magic. This ancient fertility ritual requires Tamlin to hunt a white stag, then perform the Great Rite, channeling magic to rejuvenate the land. It's primal, necessary, and dangerous for mortals. Tamlin commands Fair to stay locked in her room. She disobeys, drawn by drums that speak to something ancient within her. The festivities assail her senses, bonfires reaching toward stars, fairies shedding their usual restraint. Her vulnerability becomes stark when three predatory fairies attempt to drag her into the woods. Her rescue arrives from an unexpected source, a mysterious figure with violet eyes and dancing shadows. Rhysand, High Lord of the Night Court, warns that all the monsters have been let out of their cages tonight. Returning to the manor, she encounters Tamlin still consumed by the ritual's wild magic. He pins her against the wall, usual restraints stripped away, confessing he searched for her at the rite. The scene balances on a knife's edge between passion and violence. Fair's rejection, pushing him away, refusing to be treated like some enraged beast, demonstrates her strength while highlighting their relationship's complexity. This pivotal night introduces Rhysand and establishes an emotional triangle that will reverberate throughout the series. Kalan Mai mirrors Fair's own awakening, to desire, to dangerous beauty, to possibilities she never imagined. Spring deepens alongside Fair and Tamlin's connection through reading lessons, shared meals, and quiet afternoons where she sketches while he watches. The summer solstice celebration brings everything to a head. Dancing among will-o'-the-wisps under starlight, their first kiss beneath a flowering archway. Fair finally acknowledges what her heart has known. She's fallen irrevocably in love with the High Lord. But romance blooms against sinister backdrop. Strange creatures appear with alarming frequency. Shadow-formed bog, shape-shifting puka, signaling failing protective wards. A mysterious blight has plagued Prithian for 50 years, systematically weakening magical barriers and emptying courts. Rhysand's return as Amarantha's emissary crystallizes the true threat. The feared general from Highburn has proclaimed herself High Queen. Using formidable mental abilities, Rhysand forces an excruciating display, compelling Fair to voice her feelings while making both bow in calculated dominance. When he demands her name, Fair's quick thinking offers Claire Beddor instead, a deception with potentially catastrophic consequences. Through it all, intimacy deepens. Fair shows Tamlin her paintings, raw expressions never shared before. He reveals his painful ascension, his family's death, unwanted leadership. Their love grows from mutual understanding, yet Amarantha's shadow looms over their fragile happiness. After they sleep together, Tamlin urgently sends Fire home. She returns to find her family transformed by wealth he secretly provided, yet feels hollow despite their comfort. Then Claire Beddor's family dies in flames, retribution for Fire giving Rhysand that name. Racing back to Prithian, Fire discovers the Spring Court Manor destroyed. Elise reveals the truth. Amarantha cursed Tamlin after he publicly rejected her, declaring he'd sooner marry a human than touch her. The curse gave him 49 years to break it. His only escape? Find a human who hated fairies enough to kill one unprovoked, make her fall in love despite this act, and have her declare that love before time expired. Tamlin sent his men as wolves across the wall as sacrifices, including Andras, until the losses became unbearable. Everything recontextualizes. Tamlin's initial interest stemmed from desperate necessity, yet sending Fire away rather than revealing the curse proves his love became real. He chose to protect her from Amarantha even at the cost of his freedom. The tragedy lies in their mutual sacrifice, Tamlin surrendering freedom to save Fire, while Fire left without declaring her love, believing their relationship would only cause him pain. Fair finds Tamlin enslaved under the mountain and learns Claire Better was tortured to death in her place. Despite crushing guilt, she accepts Amarantha's bargain. Complete 3 trials or solve a riddle to free everyone. Failure means death. The trials push her to every limit, escaping a massive worm, selecting the correct lever from a written riddle, nearly impossible until Rhysand secretly helps through their mental bond, and stabbing 3 fairies through the heart. When the 3rd victim is Tamlin, Fair remembers his heart of stone is literal. She declares her love and stabs him, fulfilling both trial and curse. Amarantha, enraged, brutally tortures Fair to death. As she dies, Fair gasps the riddle's answer, love. The 7 High Lords each bestow a spark of power, resurrecting her as High Fae, no longer human, but carrying her human heart into immortal life. Despite trauma and owing 1 week monthly at the Night Court, Fair returns to the Spring Court with Tamlin. Rhysand's parting wisdom echoes, be glad of your human heart, Fair. Pity those who don't feel anything at all. As they reach the rose-covered manor, she takes Tamlin's hand. Let's go home. She's saved the courts and been transformed, because sometimes survival isn't just about staying alive, but finding reasons worth living for.